Our individual and religious liberties are under attack. If we don't protect them, they might disappear forever. Today, I discussed a way forward with someone full of wisdom and common sense. This is Out Loud with Gianno Caldwell. Welcome back to Out Loud with Gianno Caldwell. I'm so excited for today's show, and when I tell you excited, I am truly excited. My guest today is the great Dr. Ben Carson, the founder and chairman of the brand new American Cornerstone Institute, a nonprofit think tank dedicated to promoting conservative solutions to real problems our nation face. From March 2017 to January 2021, Dr. Carson served in the Trump administration as the 17th Secretary of Housing and Urban Development. Dr. Carson was also a presidential candidate in the 2016 Republican primary. Before then, he was a world-renowned neurosurgeon and became director of the pediatric neurosurgery at the Johns Hopkins Children's Center. I'll ask Dr. Carson about his extraordinary life, his new institute, conservative values, and much, much more. Let's go. Well, today I'm just so ecstatic to have one of my heroes on with me today, and that's none other than Dr. Ben Carson. Thank you for joining Out Loud with Gianno Caldwell.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure.
No, the pleasure's all mine. And I want to tell you, you know, I grew up on the south side of Chicago, extremely poor, lights, gas, and water off at the same time. And growing up, one of the people that they always put before us was your poster and talked about your story. But you had an even more direct impact on me in a way that you probably don't even know today. I got involved in media back in 2014, and it was because of people like Armstrong Williams and you, of course, who was the executive editor of American Currency, the magazine that the Washington Times distributed. And because of that, that led me to writing for a think tank called Project 21, radio started calling, B-Level TV, and then went on to work at Fox News Channel, which is where I work right now as a Fox News political analyst, and then wrote a book, and again, thanks in part to you, titled Taken for Granted, How Conservatism Can Win Back the Americans That Liberalism Failed. So I have a lot to thank you for, not only just being a leader in this movement, but certainly being an active role model and mentor to so many of us who grew up poor, whether they be white, black, or indifferent, to lead a better lives for ourselves. So I thank you so much for that, Dr. Carson.
Well, you know, it's interesting you mentioned the South Side of Chicago, because I remember some years ago going there to a high school called Wendell Phillips High School. Mm. You're probably familiar with it.
My mom went there.
Oh, really? Yes. And you would have thought a rock star had come in, because one of the banks had bought copies of my book, Gifted Hands, for all the students, and they had been reading it. And, you know, I talked about being a nerd versus being cool, and where each one of those things leads. And at the end, I said, so how many people want to be cool? Almost no one raised their hand. I said, well, how many want to be a nerd? And just about everybody raised their hand. it was pretty interesting.
No, it absolutely was. And I'm just so interested, especially considering the fact that our backgrounds are very similar in a way. Obviously, I'm not a neurosurgeon or as prolific of a figure as you at this moment. But certainly, how is it that you became conscientious of your conservative values? What drew you to conservatism? Was it a natural process, given your faith and experience, or values instilled in you, or what was it exactly?
Well, you know, I grew up in Detroit, so I was a Democrat. Detroit and Boston, Democrat strongholds. And then I went to college in New Haven, Connecticut, another Democrat stronghold. And then Ann Arbor, Michigan for medical school, another Democrat stronghold. Then to Baltimore, to Johns Hopkins, another Democratic stronghold. So I was pretty dyed-in-the-wool Democrat. And then I did something that Democrats are never supposed to do. I listened to a Republican. I listened to Ronald Reagan. And I said, this guy sounds just like my mother. And, you know, it's very commonsensical, practical stuff. And at the same time, you know, I was kind of questioning what was going on in society, because I was seeing these patients. And so many of them were, you know, being subsidized by the government, and they were perfectly healthy people. And I said, we are actually hurting these people by making them dependent on government. And that was really the beginning of my transition and wanting to change that dynamic. It is a hard dynamic to change, I got to tell you. There are many people who are very solidly invested in it. And, you know, the more dependency they can create, the greater their power becomes. And I think that was the very reason that Nikita Khrushchev many years ago said of America, he said, your grandchildren's children will live under communism and we won't have to fire a shot. Because he knew certain things. He knew that if you gain control of the school system so that you could indoctrinate the kids, he knew that if you gain control of the media so that you could suppress and promote those things that you wanted people to know, and that if you remove God and replace that with dependency on the government, and you increase the national debt to amazing levels so that you could justify massive taxes so you could redistribute the wealth and gain complete domination. And it seems like those are the very things that are happening.
Absolutely. And it reminds me of something that you wrote about in Real Clear Politics, and I'll read this particular line here. We have painted our fellow Americans as deplorable, stupid, and worse. It is this type of malicious political rhetoric fueled by opportunistic politicians and profit-driven media organizations that has rolled our deeply divided nation. And of course, we're continuing to see it more and more divided. Why do you think that is exactly? Clearly, they want dominance, they want control, but it didn't used to be this way.
No, I think it's quite intentional. And, you know, the four cornerstones that the American Cornerstone Institute is based on, faith and liberty and community and life. Well, take the community one there. This nation became strong because we had strong communities. We had people who worked together, who helped each other. And they were neighbors to each other. If a farmer broke his leg, everybody pitched in and harvested his crops for him. That's the way it used to be. Now you have a situation where that person who lived across the street from you for the last 20 years peacefully is now your enemy because they have a different yard sign than you do. And what is that caused by? That's caused by politicians and the media, nothing else. And we're allowing them to have too much influence. And one of the things that we have to begin to do is get the American people to recognize that we are not each other's enemies. We're wasting a lot of unnecessary energy being enemies for no reason. We agree on way more stuff than we disagree on, and we cannot continue to allow ourselves to be manipulated into a hateful, intolerant people.
I agree with that, absolutely. And you know what's more interesting to me? You mentioned the yard signs and how a lot of folks just would hate their neighbors, especially since the 2016 election. We've seen it dial up quite a bit. But there's beyond just that, simplistically, there's a major attack on Black conservatives. But oftentimes, I know you know this because people have called you a house N-word, a coon, any negative, disgusting name they can think of. They've also said it recently about Senator Tim Scott, and Joy Reid said that he was a prop. I know people often called you a prop for the Trump administration. We're told that we're not Black enough and we're betraying our race for taking stances like we do publicly. Why is that? And how do you handle these vicious comments, especially coming from a place where you were such a beloved figure among everyone, not just conservatives, but everyone? Kids wanted to be just like you. How do you handle all of this?
Well, just remember, this is not anything that's any different than many, many years ago during slavery. If you ran away and you got caught, they didn't just kill you. They brought you back and they tormented you in front of everybody else so that they would get the lesson, do not run away. And it's the same lesson now. Do not depart from what we told you. Do not think for yourself. And if you do, we're going to try to make an example of you so that other people won't do it. But the way I see it you have to just ask yourself, what is the right thing to do? And you pray, you ask God to give you wisdom, and you move forward. And the fact of the matter is, you know, I find tons of people, particularly in the African-American community, who very much appreciate the stance. And many of them are really starting to wake up quite rapidly and realize that they are being used and manipulated. And I think that's one of the reasons that there was so much fear of the last administration, because they were doing things that were very, very helpful to the African-American community. And a lot of people were starting to notice, and they don't want that, believe me.
Absolutely, and that's one of the things I think Maxine Waters said, if any black man, if she saw a black man voting for Trump, that she would never forgive them. And the Democrats were concerned, I think, for the first time in decades about a Republican actually garnering so much more of the black vote than they ever have because of policy implemented, which is something that you did over at HUD with Opportunity Zones. Is that right?
Opportunity Zones was only one of the things. We had Envision Centers, which brought all the things that were meant to help people be able to climb the ladder and put them under one roof and coordinate them so that that young mother with three kids who never finished high school can find out how she can get child care, can get her GED, can get advanced training, can be able to support herself and teach that to her children so you can break those cycles of poverty. And, you know, we focused virtually all the programs on self-reliance, getting out of dependency. That was a major threat to many on the left.
Yeah, absolutely. It was, and it still remains. Let's continue from there in a moment after a quick break. Last month, shortly after leaving the Trump administration, you announced that you're launching the American Cornerstone Institute, a nonprofit, nonpartisan conservative think tank. You mentioned a little bit about the institute, but what gave you the thought, the idea to start this particular institute? Because it seems like you're going to be continuing in some way, shape, or form some of the work that you did at HUD. This is self-belief, but you're inserting faith in this. How did you come about this idea here?
Well, you know, I thought seriously about retiring and relaxing, but I couldn't really do that, seeing what was happening to our country. And I just stopped and said, you know, what's happening to us? You know, the country doesn't even look like it did 20 years ago. We don't have the same values, and we seem to be heading in a downward spiral relatively quickly. So I said, what were the things that made us into a great nation? Mm. And that's when we came up with the cornerstones, faith. You know, our faith, our Judeo-Christian values told us how to relate to each other. Mm. Love your neighbor, not cancel your neighbor if you don't like what he's saying. Completely opposite now. And, you know, when you come to liberty, you know, you look at some of our fundamental liberties, like freedom of speech, one of the keys to everything in this country. And yet it's being blunted now. Now, some people say it's not really being blunted because, you know, that only refers to the government limiting your speech. That's not true. If big tech and the media impose a silence and the government is okay with it, it has the same deleterious effect. That's what's going on in this country right now. No longer the beacon. In fact, I was looking at a program last week, and students in other countries were being interviewed about whether they wanted to come to America. And to a person, they said they used to, but no, they wouldn't want to come to America now. Mm. And that really touched me about how the perception of this country is changing so incredibly rapidly. And then, you know, with community, you know, we have far more that binds us together than that divides us, and yet we allow entities like the media to come in and to grab any little thing that we disagree about and to capitalize on any differences, you know, be it race, be it gender, be it economic status, you know, it doesn't matter, be it religion, whatever. and drive wedges between the people, and then try to get each segment to think that they are the savior and that they are the ones who will make things fair for them. This is particularly obnoxious in the black community, where they're trying to get everybody to think that you're a victim, and that somehow any difficulties that you're having are the fault of someone else. You know, my mother used to always quote a poem to us when we came up with an excuse called "Yourself to Blame." And my brother and I didn't want to hear that poem, so we stopped making excuses. And it worked out just fine for us. And then, you know, the whole concept of life. You know, the further away we get from respecting life, from the womb to the tomb, the more callous and coarse our behavior becomes with respect to each other. And so that's why, you know, we're focusing on those things. It's not only a think tank, it's also a do tank. And we've got various projects going on. We'll be launching the Little Patriots this summer, in which we're teaching children at a very young age the true history of America and about civics and about how our government works, things that we have either thrown away or rewritten in an inappropriate way. And of course, that's exactly along the lines of Marxism. Karl Marx said, "Give me your young people for 3 or 4 years and I'll have them for life." Well, we want to start early teaching them the right things.
Wow. And you know, you mentioned something that I want to go back to. You talked about victimhood, which we know it's heavily and excessively exist in the black community. It exists in every community, to be perfectly honest. But we do have a lot of folks who have capitulated to the idea that they can't do particular things because of the neighborhood they grew up in, that maybe they come from a single parent home, they've been on government assistance. You're black, therefore you're incapable, as some would argue, especially on the left, you're incapable of succeeding. Now, this is disgusting in every way. I think it's real and legitimate racism when you consider people that way. And I know there's some good-intentioned white liberals who seem to have this idea and run with it on a consistent basis. It's disgusting. But I want to ask you something a bit more specific, which I think some of this comes from. Do you believe that institutional racism exists today?
I think the place where it exists is among the people who see someone like me or someone like you and decide how they must think based on their race. That's the institutional racism. But in terms of our society, you know, I grew up in Detroit and in Boston, you know, late 50s and the 60s. And believe me, I can tell you real racism when I see it. We had to deal with it every day, and it was rough. It's nothing like that today. Nothing like that at all. And, you know, you take something like the George Floyd case, which, you know, was horrible. I mean, absolutely horrible. No excuse there. But that is an incredibly unusual situation. And to try to take that and make it seem like an everyday occurrence, I think, is a real distortion of what's going on. And then to use that to incite riots and destruction of property, you know, that just doesn't make a whole lot of sense. We do need to discuss it. We do need to talk about police reform. We need to talk about alternative ways for police to apprehend people and to control people. There needs to be all of those discussions. But intelligent people, you know, learn from mistakes. And I think that officer obviously did things that were completely inappropriate that needs to be investigated in terms of why he did things that were completely inappropriate, and appropriate measures need to be taken. But that does not include destroying the lifetime work of people in that neighborhood.
Yeah, and I agree with that, especially the last point of destroying other people's work, or in your own community, to be honest. A lot of this happened in folks who may be poor or marginalized people. This happened in their community. So it was despicable. But on the point of police reform, we have had documented instances where police officers unjustly harm people or murdered people. Police have gone to jail. So we know police reform is absolutely necessitous. And talking about this institutional, the idea of institutional racism, which I personally do believe exists, do you think there are systems in place now, right now, where people are being marginalized because of their race?
As long as there's evil in the world and people with small minds, you're going to have unfairness. Mm-hmm. Do we need to make sure we have in place measures that detect that unfairness and deal with it? Absolutely. And do we need to acknowledge the fact that that has improved dramatically and will continue to improve? You know, there was a time when people honestly believed that black people were inferior intellectually. Yeah. You know, you can hold on to that if you want to, but there's multiple examples now that show that that's not true. So a lot of the behaviors that we encountered decades ago were based on false information that has been corrected. And I think we see a major change. Doesn't mean that we've completely eliminated the problem and that we don't need to be concerned about it and continue to work toward resolution.
You know, to that point, there was a time where they believed that black folks were intellectually inferior. I think that still exists today. And that I can provide the example of them saying, hey, we need to eliminate math because it's racist now. So with that being the case, they're continuing that long legacy just in a different way of attempting to marginalize black folks. So it's one of those things that have to be called out. But I want to go back to ACI, which is your institute, the four key principles: faith, liberty, community, and life. Now, you ran for president in 2016. And when you ran, and I remember because I worked with Armstrong Williams, that is, who's a close a confidant of yours. And I was very supportive of your candidacy, I think, as a lot of other people were as well. And interesting enough for me to note, some of the things you were saying were kind of focused on those four principles. And what's also interesting to me is before Donald Trump entered the scene, you were really advancing in the polls, and Donald Trump came in and said a lot of the same things that you were saying. He was just forceful. That was interesting. You legitimately could have been president. So
our policies were quite similar. Our personalities are diametrically opposed.
Absolutely, they are. But he used your same rhetoric, Muslim ban. He used a lot of the same things that you were saying, which you were dialing up in the polls, and he was just more forceful. You could have been president. Looking back on that time, how does that make you feel? If there was no Donald Trump, it might have been a Ben Carson presidency.
Well, he frequently says to me, he says, Ben, aren't you glad you didn't win? I have to admit, you know, that there may be some validity there because, you know, for the left, the only thing worse than Satan is a black conservative. Mm. You know, they just can't even abide the thought. And, you know, they would have been after me, too, maybe for different reasons. It wouldn't have been because of inflammatory comments, but they still would have been there, believe me. So, you know, the Lord knows what's best. It's fine. I'm okay. And I actually enjoyed very much this position that I'm in now as we try to find rational, logical approaches to the things that are going on and be able to explain those to people in a very reasonable, understandable way. And help the people of America to recognize that we're not each other's enemies. Stop being manipulated. This is so vitally important for everything that we do.
I agree with that wholeheartedly. Now, you know, I'm really thoughtful about how I grew up. And I mentioned South Side of Chicago, mom addicted to crack cocaine. And there was a lot of obstacles, just like you experienced. But one thing that I like to say, beyond any institutional racism, beyond any obstacles, it doesn't matter what the obstacle is, even if it's the president of the United States, my faith supersedes all laws. It supersedes any individual. It supersedes any vendetta that may be against me. What does your Christian faith mean to you? And were you able to really utilize that as a vehicle to move beyond poverty and all the things that you experienced in your youth?
It has helped me enormously. Anytime I faced obstacles, and I've had some pretty substantial obstacles along the way, believe me, and I would pray that God would either remove the obstacles or give me wisdom to know what to do. I can't think of a single time that my prayers were not answered. And I can think of a couple of times when they were, in retrospect, very inappropriate prayers. Mm. And I look back and I understand. I said, boy, thank you, Lord, for not answering that one. But he knows what he's doing. And,
absolutely.
You know, you think about those principles of loving your fellow man, caring about your neighbor, of taking care of the poor, not in a way that keeps them poor, but in a way that provides them with opportunities. You know, these are Christian biblical type principles. And when we manifested those, we did well. Now, this is some people say, yeah, but you had slavery. We weren't perfect. You know, this country was inhabited by people, and people are not perfect. And over the course of time, slavery has been a scourge on humanity. Today, there are more slaves than there have ever been in the history of the world. It's still a problem, even today, 2021. And we should work very hard to eliminate it. But do recognize that, you know, that was no big aberration. This is things that have been going on forever. Doesn't excuse it. You know, doesn't make it okay. But it puts it in context.
Absolutely. No, I appreciate you sharing that. I know faith and Christian values for some people can be such a private thing, but certainly being a public figure, I think people oftentimes will look at your life and your journey and just want to know more and want to know what God has done for you personally, which is everything. So I'm really appreciative to hear that from you myself.
It gives me confidence that we're going to get out of this situation that we're in right now in this country, because I always say God plays the long game. We tend to play the short game. We be panic and we say, oh, now this is gone. But I think it's actually very important that the nation see how the left does things, because I don't think they would have believed it if you just said, you know, they're going to be doing this and this and this. Nah, they wouldn't do that. Now you can see they would do that. And I think that's very important going forward.
Absolutely. And that makes me wonder. And by the way, I appreciate that faith gives you confidence, because faith is the assurance, the confidence, the title deed, the scripture says. So I appreciate that. Now, do you think that the Republicans are going to win back the House and the Senate here in this coming up election?
I think if they are courageous enough to insist on election reform and election integrity, absolutely they'll win it back. If they leave things like they are, they'll never win anything back.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you look at the things that happen when you have Secretary of State and governors and people who can say, well, it doesn't really matter whether the signatures match, and it doesn't matter whether you get the ballots in on time or not. It doesn't matter if the ballots aren't folded, indicating that they weren't actually mailed in. Yeah, none of that stuff really matters. It's okay. Well, as long as you're letting that go on, forget it. You're never going to win anything.
Right. 100%. So we'll see what Republicans do, but you can't do much if you don't have the majority. So understanding that federally, that's an issue, but certainly we have a lot of state houses and governorships that kind of legislative reform can be implemented.
There's a lot of concentration on that now, and that's a very good thing. It will help us. And shining the light and insisting on, you know, one of the things that the Democrats do is they insist on things, even when they're in the minority. They seem to be much better at that than the Republicans of getting their way. We need to look at their playbook.
Yeah, I think to a degree Donald Trump had already looked at the playbook and he ran it pretty hardcore. But speaking of that, as you know, in January there was issues at the Capitol. There was a riot at the Capitol, as you know. There's been numerous figures within the Trump administration who said that they either don't support the president anymore, or they're ending the movement, meaning Make America Great Again. They're not going to be a part of it. Some very prominent folks, Nikki Haley, among others, and Stacey Dash, it was just released, reported anyway. She said that after that happened at the Capitol, that she's no longer a part of the MAGA movement, but I believe she still considers herself to be a conservative. How did that impact you, and what do you think about that situation?
Well, I have a tendency to be a big picture guy. I look at the big picture. And the big picture says, if we, on the conservative side, are fractionated, cannot join forces and work together, whether it's Donald Trump at the head of the table or whoever it is at the head of the table, if we cannot unite behind them because of our little pet peeves and little things that angered us, and we're done. And again, take a page from the Democrats' playbook. They have big disagreements. You know, you have those who are moderate and those who are far left. But they put it behind them when it comes to something important to them. And if conservatives learn how to do that, believe me, they will be a formidable force. And that's why there are a lot of people out there fanning those flames. They want the conservatives to be divided in each other's throat. Believe me, that's the only way that they can stay in power.
I understand that, certainly. I want to pick up from there in a moment. But first, let's go to break. Of the Capitol, the riot at the Capitol, how did that impact you specifically? How did you feel about that situation? Do you still support the president? Are you giving up on the movement? Are you continuing strong ahead, straight ahead? How did it impact you?
Well, it was horrible, but I do not buy into the fact that the president caused it. And the FBI has plenty of evidence now that there were groups who were planning this long before the president's speech. And they were warned about it. And in fact, the president had recommended that they have 10,000 troops there. And others had requested it. And it was the leadership of the House that vetoed it because they didn't think it would look good. That's where the real blame lies. You have that many people, and you know you have some who have nefarious intentions, and you don't provide the kind of security that's necessary, and then you want to blame that all on one person? I don't think so.
But does he bear any blame in this situation? He said he was going to go to the Capitol.
Well, I think there's plenty of blame to go around. You know, there were warnings that everybody could have heeded, and I think, you know, we should have done everything we could to make sure that we cooled the situation out, particularly knowing that there were groups there who were intending to be violent.
Okay, so President Trump could have approached it quite differently than he did.
Yeah, I mean, I think in virtually every situation that goes awry, you know, in retrospect, you could have done much better.
Mm-hmm. No, I appreciate that assessment, Dr. Carson. Now, before I let you go, I wanted to ask you about your career in medicine. Clearly, enormously successful, a giant in the medical field. And you've talked about before how you got interested in medicine. Now, is there still a chance that you might go back into medicine at some point? Would you do that?
Pretty unlikely at age 69. I think I probably would find it a little more stressful and demanding than my body might have the energy for. But I stay obviously quite interested in it, still do a lot of reading and keeping up with what's going on.
Okay, I understand that. Now, let me ask you this question, which I think would probably be a head scratcher. If the Biden administration wanted to use you in an advisory capacity, would you do it as a medical expert?
I would always be willing to do things to help our nation. Hmm. I don't care who was asking.
No, I appreciate that. Thank you so much for that.
I'm not a highly partisan person, but I am a highly patriotic person. And if there are things that can be done that will support and uplift our nation, I would always do those things.
All right. Well, I appreciate that. My one and final question to you, Dr. Carlson. You obviously became well known for your work as a neurosurgeon years ago, but you first gained national fame, if you will, in a political context among conservatives in 2013 when you spoke at the National Prayer Breakfast and seemed to be critical of then President Obama's policies. Did you ever think back then that one day you would have served in a president's cabinet and be so involved in politics in a leadership capacity?
No, that certainly was not part of the plan. But it's interesting, though. You know, some of the people on the left have said to me, that was very offensive what you said during that prayer breakfast. And I said, well, it seems to me that it would only be offensive if it applied to you. Which made them even angrier.
I'm sure it did. Is there anything new for you coming up? Do you have any big projects coming up that folks at home should know about? And where can people find you on social media and elsewhere?
Well, people should go to AmericanCornerstone.org. And there's some beautiful videotapes there, some newsletters, op-eds, all kinds of things. And there's even a donate button. So there's all kind of good things to do there. Get involved. This is the real key thing. This country is up for and by the people, not up for and by the government. And that means we have to take an active role. If we don't take an active role, the government just expands. And we wind up with the very kind of situation that people were fleeing from when they came to this country in the first place.
Wow. So, so true. And is Dr. Ben Carlson on social media?
We have a Facebook page, and we'll continue to use that. But we're also looking at some other very interesting developing platforms to make sure that you can actually get your voice out there without worrying about whether somebody's going to be looking over your shoulder and deciding whether you can say that or not.
Thank you so, so much for joining me here on Out Loud with Gianno Caldwell, and your message will go far and long. We really appreciate for all you mean to this country, to this world, and as a Christian, one Christian to another, thank you for continuing to speak about your faith, because there's a lot of people who are hurting, who can't see a way forward, but they hear about your story and now all of a sudden they believe. And I think that's certainly an aspect of faith and abundance. So thank you, and we're praying for you, Doc.
And thank you for what you're doing for our country. We really appreciate it.
I want to give a special thanks to Dr. Ben Carlson for an extraordinary interview. If you're enjoying the show, please leave us a review and rate us with 5 stars on Apple Podcasts. If you have any questions for me, please email me at outloud@gingrich360.com and I'll try to answer them in our future episodes. And please sign up for my monthly newsletter at gingrich360.com/outloud. You can also find me on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and Parler at Gianno Caldwell. If you're interested in learning more about my story, please pick up a copy of my best-selling book titled Taken for Granted, How Conservatism Can Win Back the Americans That Liberalism Failed. Special thanks to our producer, John Cassio, researcher Aaron Klingman, and executive producers Debbie Myers, and of course, speaker Newt Gingrich, all part of the Gingrich 360 Network.